Majalila, chapter 19, text 133. Chaitanya, you do one word at a time, then do the whole. Chaitanyera Vipa Rupa Likhyachena Apane Rasamrita Sindhu Granthera Mangala Acharane Chaitanyera Kripa Rupa Likhyachena Apane Chaitanyera Kripa Rupa Likhyachena Apane Rasamrita Sindhu Granthera Mangala Charane Rasamrita Sindhu Granthera Mangala Charane Chaitanyera Kripa Rupa Likhyachena Apane Chaitanyera Kripa Rupa Likhyachena Apane Rasamrita Sindhu Granthera Mangala Charane Chaitanyera of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kripa, the mercy. Rupa, Srila Rupa Goswami. Likhyachena, has written. Apane, personally. Tasamrita Sindhu Granthera, of the book known as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Mangala Charane, in the auspicious introduction. Translation. Srila Rupa Goswami has personally spoken about the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his auspicious introduction to his book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Srila Rupa Goswami has personally spoken about the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his auspicious introduction to his book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's the duty of the disciple to glorify his spiritual master and all great devotees, acharyas, mahabhagwatas, mahajans, and other spiritual authorities. As we sing every morning, sakshat hari tvena samasta shastra prashtatava satayiva sadhi, the spiritual master is given as much honor as the Supreme Lord because of his being the most confidential servitor of the Lord. And that this is confirmed in all Vedic literatures and by all great authorities, knowledge in the revealed scriptures and confirmed by great authorities. So it's natural Prahlad Maharaj was known for glorifying. It's described there in the seventh canto that he looked upon, or he treated his authorities, his spiritual masters, and his elder godbrothers, it is said, as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's an obligation, a feeling of indebtedness on the part of the aspiring devotee or the disciple to his spiritual master, and to spiritual authorities. As it is said in the next verse, the Guru Vastakam, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Jogi. I am Sivam Sasya Yasasvi Sanyam Vande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. That is, by the mercy of the spiritual master that one gets the blessings of Krishna. So when one is blessed to have the mercy of such a pure devotee, spiritual master, then it's natural that he wants to repay the debt, although it is said the debt to the spiritual master can never be repaid. But he's feeling this obliged sense of obligation, the sense of wanting to continually offer his thanks and appreciation. In this way, Krishna is actually very pleased, and his spiritual master is pleased, and he feels very happy and very satisfied. Because our constitutional position is Jiva Sarupa Nitya Krishna Dasi. We are eternally Krishna's servant by nature. That's our constitutional position. And this is most easily and best realized when we are serving Krishna directly through other devotees. And then we're feeling the reciprocation coming. We may not be able to feel it so easily with the deity. Krishna is not so easy to perceive, even though we may be looking right at him in the deity form, but we may not be seeing he is Krishna. Like when Prabhupada saw the deity, we could understand he was seeing Krishna. He was actually seeing, this is Krishna, he's here standing before me now, playing his flute, smiling. He was Krishna, not just a form of Krishna, but Krishna. So to come to that stage is not such an ordinary thing, but by having reciprocation with spiritual authorities, then we're feeling immediately some reciprocation from Krishna, because Krishna's mercy is coming through those devotees. Krishna is coming through so many devotees. And we're very blessed to have this association. And we want to, the more we relish this association, the more easily Krishna will be approached. The more we learn how to take this association, then the more quickly we'll advance, and the more easily we'll advance, the more quickly Krishna will be pleased. So that's the nature of a devotee. He feels always this sense of indebtedness and wanting to offer respects. And because the whole process is transcendental, he never feels this is energy gone to waste. In the material world, the reverse is true. If one gives oneself to some other person, in the end he feels frustrated, because it ultimately must be unsatisfactory because of the nature of the defects of the human being. The human being in the conditioned state must be imperfect, must cheat, must have perfect senses, must make mistakes. He must come under illusion. So giving in the material world is not satisfactory. One gives everything but disappointed in the end. But in spiritual life, one gives everything and gets more in return. So there's no disappointment. And that's the difference. Therefore, we're hesitant, we're reluctant to give such respect to others, because in the material world, our experience has been, must necessarily be, that we're cheated. We give everything, but we can never get a satisfactory return because of the nature of the conditioned souls in the material world. You know, the marginal energy is like that. So it's proper that before one enters any kind of endeavor in spiritual life, as writing a book, Rupa Goswami was, or beginning some project, starting some preaching program, or even speaking on behalf of Krishna, that one should make some offering, offer respect to the spiritual master, so that he remains connected with Krishna. And then everything becomes auspicious, just like we see in all of Prabhupada's books. He's offering thanks to the spiritual master at the end of every chapter. of the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj is offering his respects to six Goswamis. So this is the way one stays connected with spiritual life. Not that we can... And Prabhupada told a story once. Actually, this happened when he was on Second Avenue, on the Bowery. He was living with this boy who had become a little deranged. So he was in a threatening position. And he said that there's a saying in India that you get a spiritual master, somehow you find a spiritual master, and you learn from him everything you can. You sit across from him and you listen very carefully. Then as soon as you've acquired knowledge, you kill him and you move his dead body aside. You sit in his place and you become the spiritual master. So this is the material conception. Everyone wants to get some knowledge and become the Lord, become the ruler, without any proper respect for the teacher. So, in spiritual life, we maintain our relationship with a spiritual master eternally. Even after liberation, even after going to attaining a spiritual body and going to the spiritual world, they're still offering a respect eternally, and the relationship grows deeper and deeper and deeper. One devotee told Prabhupada that they had a dream that he was in the spiritual world offering respects to his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta, washing his feet with tears. And Prabhupada said, "Thank you very much for dreaming like that." So even in the spiritual world, the relationship continues. It grows deeper and matures. So I'll read the next text, 134. Vidyasya prerana Preranaya pravartito hamvaraka rupapi tasya hare pada kamalam vande chaitanya devasya. Translation. Although I am the lowest of men and have no knowledge, the inspiration to write transcendental literatures about devotional service has been mercifully bestowed upon me. Therefore, I am offering my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me the chance to write these books. So, he's not taking any credit for himself. And this is what Prabhupada said was his only credit. He said this many times, that if I have any credit, he said, it is only due to the fact that I have tried to fulfill the wishes of my spiritual master without adding anything. That was the key phrase, without adding anything, just to follow the instruction purely and to pass it along. So that is the meaning of empowerment. One is empowered, then one can speak perfectly on transcendental literature. We're speaking actually based on what we've heard. There's the process of hearing and chanting. And if one can hear very nicely, this was Prabhupada's qualification, according to Bhaktisiddhanta, that this boy hears very nicely. If one can hear and focus on the instructions of the spiritual master, then everything becomes very happy and natural. And we've seen even in our own short history, relatively short, of Krishna consciousness in the West, that when we've been able to understand and follow Prabhupada's instructions clearly, and without motivation, without adulteration, and continuous meditative way, that we've been able to progress very nicely. But when we deviate due to lack of attention or intelligence or organization or simply being a spiritual weakness, succumbing to the power of Maya, then we have seen so many problems occur, deviations and inability to actually prosecute Krishna consciousness properly, individually and collectively. So the character of devotees is something very wonderful. And this is a very wonderful quality to hear and surrender and carry out the order of the spiritual master. Very simple, thing to do, yet because of our conditioned nature, is the most difficult of all things to do. Therefore, bhakti yoga is at once easy and most difficult. It's sometimes said to be like a razor's edge. Very easy in that one can just sit down, chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, associate with devotees. And Prabhupada said once, it's practically speaking a process of recreation, Krishna consciousness. It's a process of recreation. Eating, feasting, dancing, and singing, glorifying the Lord. But at the same time, it is the most difficult of all paths because we are striving for the highest goal, to attain prema bhakti, pure love of God. So, of course, Prabhupada said also, for the simple, Krishna consciousness is very simple. And for the complicated, it's complicated. If our minds are complicated by material desires or the tendency to speculate, then Krishna consciousness becomes very difficult. Krishna becomes a very complex, difficult person. But for the simple, it becomes very easy. It's like we see that picture of the cow, Krishna embracing the cow. He's feeling very protected, and Krishna's feeling very protective towards the innocent creature surrendering to Krishna. So if it's possible to simply meditate perfectly on Krishna, to surrender, depend on Krishna for everything, just like a child, then the whole process becomes very easy and sublime. I'll read the next. Text 135. Emata dashadina prayage rahiya Shri Rupe Shiksha Dila Shakti Sanchariya. For 10 days, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Prayag and instructed Rupa Goswami, empowering him with the necessary potency. Purport. This is a confirmation of the statement, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tara Pravartana. Unless one is specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot spread the Krishna consciousness movement. An empowered devotee sees and feels himself to be the lowest of men, for he knows that whatever he does is due to the inspiration given by the Lord in the heart. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satati Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Vadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Jena Mamupayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To be empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to qualify himself. This means that one must engage 24 hours daily in a loving devotional service of the Lord. The material position of a devotee doesn't matter because devotional service is not dependent on material considerations. In his earlier life, Srila Rupa Goswami was a government officer and a grihastha. He was not even a brahmachari or sannyasi. He associated with malechas and yavanas, but because he was always eager to serve, he was a qualified recipient of the Lord's mercy. A sincere devotee can therefore be empowered by the Lord regardless of his situation. In the preceding verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has described how he was personally empowered by the Lord. He further states in Bhakti Rasamrita 1-187, Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasagira nikilas vapyavasta su jivan mukta sa uchite. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, and words is a liberated person even in the material world, although he may be engaged in so many material activities. To keep oneself free from material contamination and attain the Lord's favor, one must be sincerely anxious to render service to the Lord. This is the only qualification necessary. As soon as one is favored by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Lord, one is immediately given all the power necessary to write books and propagate the Krishna consciousness movement without being hampered by material considerations. So Prabhupada says that one must engage 24 hours daily in the loving devotional service of the Lord. Tasmade kena manasa bhagavan satvatam pati shrotavya kirtatavyasya yaya pujascha nichita. This is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how devotional service, that is the process of hearing, glorifying, worshipping the Lord, must be done constantly. So this is a very important word, constantly, and Prabhupada elucidates more by saying 24 hours a day. And Prabhupada used to say sometimes he was dreaming that he was attacked in his sleep by a tiger. You may have heard this. And he would shout, Krishna, Hare Krishna, so loud that his neighbors would complain. He had complaints coming in frequently. Because he was never for a moment not meditating on Krishna, even in sleep. Well, once we had to wake Prabhupada up, he had an urgent phone call. Remember, I was deputed to do the deed, so I had to enter his room, and I knocked and said, Prabhupada, and instantly he was sat up. He was just completely awake. It's almost as if he wasn't ever asleep. So that's a 24-hour day. I could understand that he was not an ordinary person by any means, just sleeping. We have to turn the alarm clock off 6 times before we can drag ourselves out of bed. But this is meditation on Krishna 24 hours a day. So this is the meaning of empowerment, that it's not an ordinary thing to be empowered by Krishna, to think of Krishna all the time. To keep oneself free from material contamination, attain the Lord's favor, one must be sincerely anxious. And then Prabhupada says this is the only qualification necessary. Prabhupada described this once in a lecture, Ruchi. This is the single qualification. If there is enthusiasm, great eagerness to execute Krishna consciousness, this is the first qualification. One has great eagerness. And we can see actually how difficult this is. We have our bursts of eagerness. We're all down there at the Houses of Parliament yesterday, and Thursday, we're all fired up. There's a Rath Yatra, and everyone's jumping and dancing. Or Prabhupada is coming, and it's a big festival. But then the next day comes, and the next day, and the next day. And we can't maintain it every day. I remember I had the fortune to organize one of the Rath Yatras in Los Angeles, and for weeks and weeks, I was so engaged. All I could think of it. I couldn't even hardly sleep at night. Couldn't hardly eat. It was just so ecstatic, day after day after day. But then when it was over, it wasn't the same. I was actually praying to Krishna during that time, let me always be eager and enthusiastic, and to just not even think about eating and sleeping. But it's not an easy thing. One has to be actually empowered. I could understand there was some mercy coming at that time, but one has to be so enthusiastic at every second that that is there constantly. There's not a moment when we're not just eagerly thinking, how can I serve Krishna? How can I serve Krishna? What can I do now? What can I do this minute? What can I do that minute? We can just imagine Prahlad, who said how he was so treating his superiors just like they were Krishna himself. So just imagine if we saw everyone as Krishna himself, how eager we would be running from one thing to the next. And said Prahlad used to serve all the devotees like a menial servant. He would just imagine if we could see everyone like that. There would be no shortage of service. Our enthusiasm would be so intense, so continuous. So this is the meaning of enthusiasm and service 24 hours a day. One must be sincerely anxious to render service to the Lord. And then as soon as one is favored by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Lord, one is immediately given all the power necessary to write books and propagate Krishna consciousness. supposition Prabhupada writes to the devotee doesn't matter because devotional service is not dependent on material consideration. Sometimes as our movement was growing, we were concerned with different impediments and obstacles. And Prabhupada would frequently write, well, just depend on everything we do. Just be patient and depend on Krishna. There will be so many obstacles. You can imagine even during the time of the Swamis, during the Chaitanya's time, they were living under the Mohammedan government. It was not always so easy. And just like now, we're having a big issue on our planning. This is actually part of our special heritage. We've always had so many times they had to confront the Mohammedan government in Bengal. But they were patient and they did their duty and they received Krishna consciousness that spread. Millions and millions of devotees gained in India. And the devotees had to persevere. It's mentioned here that Rupa Goswami had to associate with so many lectures and others. But he was always eager to serve. He was qualified recipient for the Lord's mercy. Actually, the Goswamis are conceivably powerful, wonderful devotees. I was doing one table with Prabhupada describing their qualities. And that they never said that they were seeing Krishna. Never said that they were seeing Krishna in a vision. They were seeing Krishna in a dream. Not like that. But they were always carrying themselves as the most unqualified and ignorant and lowest people. And they were always begging for the mercy of Krishna, rather than saying that they had a vision of Krishna. They were always glorifying everyone else as being greater than themselves. They would always see other devotees as greater than they were. And in that same lecture, Prabhupada said, just like Radharani, she's seeing all other devotees as greater than herself. She's seeing all others, and therefore she recommends to Krishna. She recommends so many devotees to Krishna. And I am a very poor servant, but everyone else is rendering service. Only I am not. Vision of Radharani. And the Goswamis in that mood are saying everyone else is rendering service, but I can render service. And Prabhupada was saying that at that time that even Lord Chaitanya himself was saying that I had no love of Krishna. That I actually have no love of Krishna, but Prabhupada said, I am an advertiser. I just advertise myself as being a servant of Krishna. I'm just a big advertiser. I'm not actually having any love of Krishna. Now, what is the proof of that statement? But the proof is that I'm still alive. I'm still maintaining my body. Because if I had actually love for Krishna, then I could not live for one moment. I could not live. So that was the move of the Goswami. And that they couldn't live for one second. They couldn't bear the separation of living apart from Krishna. It was just too painful for them. So that's the devotee's eagerness. He's so eager to see Krishna at every moment. He wants to see Krishna here, there, everywhere, that he just feels he cannot bear this separation. So that means 24-hour meditation. He's just waiting to come to Krishna, to see Krishna. And then, regardless of his position, he can be empowered. The devotees in Lord Chaitanya's time, many of them, Rupa Goswami was one also, Sanatana, they weren't from high-class families. And yet they became very, very, very powerful. They were rejected. Das Thakur was also rejected by the Brahmin community. Yet they became great, great spiritual masters. So devotees are everywhere. They're coming in every shape and form. And they can become, from the Yavana Malachi class, they can become great, great spiritual masters. So this is all due to this process of empowerment. One gets the association to a great devotee, becomes empowered through his eagerness and sincerity, and we see so many wonderful things. Well, Lord Chaitanya was indiscriminate in his mercy. Prabhupada thought, or he was not thinking, but he was saying sometimes it'll be very difficult for us to go to some countries and see Pakistan, certain places. There's great animosity towards the Hindus. But by persevering, we're seeing that so many have devotees. So this is the universal nature of Krishna consciousness. He said the Krishna consciousness movement is scientific authorized in the universe. People in every part of the world. There are devotees everywhere, every kind of body imaginable. I remember some devotees from Canada were up in Alaska teaching to the Eskimos. Of course they couldn't read, but they were distributing back to Godhead. They had some pictures of them. They were very, very intrigued looking at the pictures. We have other experiences of people who are primitive, illiterate. And they're very, very attracted by the devotees. They take the magazine, shot them, devotees themselves, pictures. So this shows that the devotees are universally attracted in the whole process of the universe. Kali Yuga. Therefore, we have to take so many risks to go everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the chapter describing the four types of people who don't come to Krishna consciousness, Maya, Vijayana, they're all described there in detail in purport. And so you're kind of left with a feeling that, well, these guys, it's not going to make it. They don't have to bother. Then at the end, Prabhupada says in the purport, but by the, although it is said they never come to Krishna consciousness, is they do by the mercy of the devotee. The association of the devotee and the mercy of the devotee, such people become devotees. So devotees have to be very, very merciful and even have to approach those who are not meant to come to Krishna consciousness. And that was the mercy of Lord Nityananda. He was attacked, he was cursed at, he was in so many ways abused by Jagai and Madai. And Lord Chaitanya came to wipe them out instantly. But Nityananda set the example that the whole of Kali Yuga are like this. So then, therefore, the example was set that we have to take risks and even approach those who may be abusive. And that's our experience. We've seen sometimes very abusive people. If they're inimical, they become great devotees. Kali Yuga is a very difficult stage in there. We must take risks in order to advance the course of Krishna consciousness and mission. And go into places or approach people who may be very dangerous. Like that's the nature of Kali Yuga. One has to be very courageous in practicing Krishna consciousness and preaching. Prabhupada said that wherever we go to preach, to carry out this mission, there will be opposition. May not always be there, but preaching means we have to face opposition and learn how to tolerate it everywhere. Sometimes it may be more intense. The devotee, preaching means tolerating. Very patient and very tolerant. And then Prabhupada quotes this verse that one can become a liberated person even in the material body. Jivan Mukta Sarichate. If he's acting in the service of Krishna, body, mind, and words, with his body, mind, and words, he's a liberated person even in the material world. So factually speaking, one who engages he comes to the platform of liberation as long as he is purely preaching Krishna's message and not inventing anything. And because he's on this liberated platform, then he has the power to liberate others. Through the process of spreading Krishna consciousness. One who is liberated in this material body, he may not be permanently liberated, but he may be liberated for short periods of time. He still has the power to liberate others. There's one conversation where Prabhupada was saying that even Lord Brahma, he's not a pure devotee. No, he's in our sampradaya. So Satsarupa is asked, well, how can that be? He's in our disciple succession. He's not a pure devotee. And Prabhupada said, no, because he is transmitting the message purely, he can be considered pure and he can be in our sampradaya. So even if one doesn't come to the perfect, pure stage. Of course, we all want that as our goal, and we all must strive. But in the course of becoming pure devotees, we, by our sincerity, can empower others. We can become empowered, and we can empower others. Not that we should try to compromise and not strive for perfection, but we also have to have confidence that even in our clearing stage, in our imperfect stage, we have to be confident that we can preach as long as we're repeating without any adulteration, passing on the message without any contamination. Then others can be empowered as well to accept and preach Krishna consciousness. Text 136. Prabhu kahe sunarupa bhakti rase lakshana sutra rupe kahi vistara nayaya varnana. Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Rupa, please listen to me. It is not possible to describe devotional service completely. Therefore, I am just trying to give you a synopsis of the symptoms of devotional service." 37. Para para sunya gabira bhakti rasa sindhu tomaya chakaite tarakahi eka bindu. The ocean of the transcendental mellow of devotional service is so big that no one can estimate its length and breadth. However, just to help you taste it, I am describing but one drop. 138. Eta brahmanda bari ananta jivagana chorasi laksha yoni te karaye brahmana. In this universe there are limitless living entities in 8,400,000 species, and all are wandering within this universe. Purport. This is a challenge to so-called scientists and philosophers who presume that there are living entities on this planet only. So-called scientists are going to the moon, and they say that there is no life there. This does not tally with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's version. He says that everywhere within the universe, there are unlimited numbers of living entities in 8,400,000 different forms. In Bhagavad Gita 2.24, we find that the living entities are sarvagata, which means that they can go anywhere. This indicates that there are living entities everywhere. They exist on land and water, in air, in fire, and in ether. Thus, there are living entities in all types of material elements. Since the entire material universe is composed of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, why should there be living entities on one planet and not others? Such a foolish version can never be accepted by Vedic students. From the Vedic literatures, we understand that there are living entities on each and every planet, regardless of whether the planet is composed of earth, water, fire, or ether. These living entities may not have the same forms that are found on this planet Earth, but they have different forms composed of different elements. Even on this Earth, we can see that forms of land animals are different from the forms of aquatics. According to the circumstance, living conditions differ, but undoubtedly, there are living entities everywhere. Why should we deny the existence of living entities on this or that planet? Those who have claimed to have gone to the moon have not gone there. Or else their imperfect vision cannot actually perceive the particular type of living entities there. Living entities are described as ananta, or unlimited. Nonetheless, they are said to belong to 8,400,000 species, as stated in the Vishnu Purana, Chalaja Nava Lakshani, Stavara Lakshi Vimsati, Pimayo Rudra Sankhyata, Pakshinam Dasha Lakshana, Vimsa Lakshani Pashava, Chatur Lakshani Munasha, Manusha. There are 900,000 species living in the water. There are also 2 million non-moving species, living entities, tatvara, such as trees and plants. There are also 1,100,000 species of insects and reptiles, and there are 1 million species of birds. As far as quadrupeds are concerned, there are 3 million varieties, and there are 400,000 human species. Some of these species may exist on one planet and not on another, but in any case, within all the planets of the universe, and even in the sun, there are living entities. This is the verdict of Vedic literature. This Bhagavad Gita 220 confirms, Najayate Mriyate Vakadachi Nayam Buddha Bhavi Kavana Buddha Ajanuk Chakshashvato Yam Purano Sahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. For the soul, there is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Since the living entities are never annihilated, they simply transmigrate from one life form to another. Thus there is an evolution of forms according to the degree of developed consciousness. One experiences different degrees of consciousness in different forms. A dog's consciousness is different from a man's. Even within a species, we find that a father's consciousness is different from his son's, and that a child's consciousness is different from a youth. Just as we find different forms, we find different states of consciousness. When we see different states of consciousness, we may take it for granted that the bodies are different. In other words, different types of bodies depend on different states of consciousness. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, Yam Yam Vapi Svaram Bhavam. One's consciousness at the time of death determines the type of body of the living entity. This is the process of transmigration of the soul. A variety of bodies is already there. We change from one body to another in terms of our consciousness. So, we'll stop here. Any questions, comments? Yeah, there's a line. Of course, there's maybe referring to this to over endeavor to try to do more than is possible to do. So on the one hand, we try to strive to, Prabhupada used the phrase, shoot the rhinoceros. We always try to have a vision to do that which is perhaps beyond us, what seems to be beyond us, what seems to be very difficult. And to take risks to do it. And if that becomes such an endeavor that it interferes with our spiritual life, and we begin to think in material terms, that is where we have to draw the line, because it's possible. We've seen in our history of our movement that devotees become ambitious to serve their spiritual master. That's very wonderful. But in the process, because they're not hearing properly, not chanting properly, or there's some other deficiency in their sadhana, they become victimized by the material energy. And this is called over-endeavoring. One should endeavor very wholeheartedly and be very eager to do very wonderful things to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And this is glorified. But there's a very nice quote. It's in a little book that's printed in Mayapur, where Prabhupada says, "We will be judged by our character, our behavior, and our preaching." So the order is interesting. Even though there's a great impetus to preach, the first things were character and behavior. So if our character and our behavior are not proper, are not correct, our great endeavors and great plans to achieve wonderful, great things, they can collapse. And we've seen some big projects have collapsed. And the root cause is that somehow or other, there was a deficiency in our personal behavior and character, in our purity. So purity must be maintained at all costs. If we maintain our purity, then we'll get the proper intelligence, te shamsatakti yuktanam, the dhammi buddhi yoga. We'll get the buddhi yoga, the proper intelligence. Prabhupada, we read the John Prabhupada's disappearance day, how one has to have very excellent sadhana. And then Prabhupada added organization and intelligence. But that intelligence is coming from Krishna. It's not ordinary material intelligence. So we will naturally be taking some risks in trying to do difficult things. But we have to be intelligent. Us to engage in this fight for Krishna, but we're also feeling confident that whatever happens, it is Krishna's mercy. Somehow or other, we don't succeed. That is another form of Krishna's mercy. That he has another plan for us to do something more wonderful, something even greater. So in that sense, when we know we're endeavoring properly, we're fixed in the right path. What we're doing is confirmed by Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Then there's no loss. In this path, there's no loss or diminution. Excuse me. Just like the Pandavas, they lost their whole kingdom. But it was actually a great gain in the end. The victory was sweeter when Maharaj Yudhisthira ascended to the throne. This is Krishna's plan to glorify his devotees. So there's so many risks, but if we're confident we're following in the proper footsteps, our endeavor is in line with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with devotees, with the Shastra, then we can proceed. We can take so many unlimited risks. Is that something?